This is disc number 2.
Richard stepped closer to the table below Nikki. What's going on? Is Nikki all right? Is she in danger? Zed finally looked back and sighed. We don't exactly know for sure, my boy. Nathan came out of the shadows and toward the table, into the greenish light. The tall prophet's dark azure eyes were clearly troubled. He opened his hands in a gesture of reassurance, his long white hair brushing his shoulders as he shrugged slightly. We think she is all right, Richard. She should be just fine, Anne assured him as she joined Nathan. The broad-shouldered prophet towered over her. In her plain woolen dress, with her graying hair gathered back into a loose bun, she looked all the more plain beside Nathan. Richard thought that just about anyone would probably look plain beside Nathan. Richard gestured, indicating the net of geometric lines that encased Nikki. What is this thing? A verification web, his grandfather said. Richard frowned. Verification? Verification of what? Chain fire, Zed told him in a somber voice. We're trying to figure out precisely how a chain fire event functions so that we can see if there is a way to reverse it. Richard scratched his temple. Oh. He was liking the whole thing less and less. He desperately wanted to find Kaelin, yet he was deeply worried for what could happen to Nikki in such an attempt to unravel mysterious powers created by ancient wizards. As first wizard, Zed had abilities and talents that Richard could not begin to fathom, and yet those wizards in ancient times far surpassed Zed's gift. With as much as Zed, Nathan, Anne, and Nikki knew, as powerful as they all were, they were still dabbling with things outside their experience, things beyond their ability, things that even those ancient wizards feared. Still, what choice did they have? Besides caring deeply for Nikki, Richard needed her to help him find Kaelin. While the others might in some areas be more powerful or more knowledgeable than Nikki, the sum of everything about her put her on a different plane. She was probably the most powerful sorceress ever to have drawn a breath. What others could do with a great effort, Nikki could do with a glance. As remarkable as that was, to Richard that was probably one of the least remarkable things about Nikki. Other than Kaelin, he didn't know anyone who could focus on a goal as tenaciously as Nikki. Kara could be just as unflinching about defending him, but Nikki was able to center that kind of tenacity on anything she set her mind to. Back when she had fought against him, her reckless determination made her not just brutally effective, but profoundly dangerous. Richard was glad all that had changed. Since the search for Kaelin had begun, Nikki had become his closest and most steadfast friend. Nikki knew, though, that his heart belonged to Kaelin, and that could never change. He raked his fingers back through his hair. Well, why is she up there in the middle of the thing? She's the only one of us who knows how to use subtractive magic, Anne said in simple summary. A chain fire event needs subtractive elements to ignite it and then to make it function. We're trying to understand the whole spell, both the additive and subtractive components. Richard supposed that made sense, but it still didn't make him feel any better about it. And Nikki agreed to this? Nathan cleared his throat. It was her idea. Of course it was. Richard sometimes thought the woman had a death wish. It was times like this that he wished he knew more about such things. He was feeling ignorant again. He gestured up at the totality of everything floating above the table. I never realized that verification webs used people. I mean, I never knew that such webs were cast around someone like that. Neither did we, exactly, Nathan said in that deep, commanding voice of his. Richard felt uncomfortable under the prophet's gaze, so he turned to Zed. What do you mean? Zed shrugged. This is the first time any of us has ever done an aspect analysis of a verification web from an interior perspective. To do so requires subtractive magic, so casting a verification web in this manner probably hasn't been done in perhaps thousands of years. Then how did you know how to do it? Just because none of us has ever done such a thing, Anne said, that doesn't mean we haven't studied various accounts of it. Zed gestured to one of the other tables. We've been reading the book you found, Chainfire. It's more complex than anything any of us has ever seen before, so we wanted to try to understand everything about it. While we've never done an interior perspective before, it's really just an extension of what we already know. As long as you know how to run a standard verification web, and you have the required elements of the gift, you can perform the aspect analysis from an interior perspective. That's what Nikki is doing. That's why she had to be the one to do it. If there's a standard process, then why would this method be needed? Zed lifted a hand toward the lines around Nikki. An interior perspective is said to show the spell form in more revealing detail, down to a more elemental level than you see in the standard verification process. Since it is said to show more than can be learned in the standard process, and Nikki was able to initiate it, we all decided that it would be an advantage to do it this way. Richard was starting to breathe a little easier. So then using Nikki in this way is just an abstract analysis. It means nothing more. Zed looked away from Richard's eyes as he lightly rubbed the furrows on his brow. This is only a verification process, Richard, not an ignition of the actual event, so, in a sense, it's not real. What the real spell does in an instant, this inert form stretches out into a lengthy verification process so as to enable a comprehensive analysis. Although not without its risks, that's not the viable spell itself you see around Nikki. Zed cleared his throat. When the actual spell would have been cast, though, instead of Nikki, that would have been Kaelin, and it would have been all too real. Goosebumps ran up Richard's arms. His mouth felt so dry that he could hardly talk. He could feel his heart pounding through the veins in his neck. He wanted that not to be true. But you said that you needed Nikki in order to cast this web. You said that you could only do it because she can work subtractive magic. Kaelin wouldn't have been able to do that for the sisters, and in any event she wouldn't have cooperated. Zed shook his head. The sisters were casting the real spell around Kaelin. They had command of subtractive power and would have had no need for Kaelin's cooperation. We needed Nikki to work it from inside, using both additive and subtractive aspects, so that we can try to determine how it functions. The two aren't analogous. Well, how... Richard, his grandfather said, gently cutting him off. As I said, we're rather busy. Right now is not the time to discuss this. We need to observe the process so we can try to figure out the equational behavior of the spell. Let us do our job, will you? Richard slipped his hands into his back pockets. Sure. He glanced back at Kara. She wore what people might see as a blank expression. But to Richard, as well as he knew her, it revealed a great deal and seemed to reflect his own suspicions. He turned back to his grandfather. Are you having some kind of trouble? Zed cast the others a sidelong glance, and only grunted before turning back to studying the geometric form surrounding the woman floating before him. Richard knew his grandfather well enough to know by his drawn features that he was either unhappy or very worried. Richard didn't think that either prospect augured well. He began to worry himself, for Nikki. As the others stood back to take it all in, frowning in concentration as they pondered the way the glowing verification web continued to trace new lines through space, Richard stepped closer. He slowly walked around the table, finally studying, for the first time really, the lines crisscrossing through the air all around Nikki. As he moved in closer and stepped around the table, he realized that the lines actually formed a cylinder in space, like something flat that had been rolled up, with Nikki inside that cylinder. That meant that all the lines were simply a two-dimensional drawing, even if they did wrap around until they met. Richard mentally flattened out that cylindrical form, much like unrolling a scroll, in order to see it in his mind as a more customary line drawing. When he did so, he began to realize that there was something oddly familiar about the network of lines. The more Richard studied it, the more he couldn't stop staring at it, as if it were pulling him in, drawing him into the pattern of lines, angles, and arcs. There seemed to be something he should recognize about it all, but he couldn't figure out what. He thought that perhaps he should regard a spell form that had been cast around Kaelin, as this terrible thing had been, to be evil, but he didn't feel that way. The spell form existed. It did not possess the quality of being good or evil. The ones who cast the web around Kaelin were the real evil. Those four sisters were the ones who had used the spell for their own evil ends. They had used it as part of their plan to have the Boxes of Orden and to free the Keeper from the underworld, to loose death on the living, all in return for beguiling promises of immortality. Gazing at the lines, Richard began to scrutinize the rhythm in those lines, their patterns, their flow. As he did so, he began to get an inkling of their significance. He was beginning to see purpose in the design. Richard pointed to a place near Nikki's extended right arm, just below her elbow. "This place here is wrong," he said as he frowned into the fabric woven of light. Zed came to a halt. "Wrong?" Richard hadn't realized that he'd said it out loud, at least not loud enough for others to hear. "Yes, that's right, it's wrong." Chapter 5. Richard went back to studying the lines, tilting his head to better follow them along as they went through a complex intersection of routes coming around from all directions to end up before Nikki's middle. He was beginning to grasp the meaning of those routes and the larger intent of the design. "I think there's a supporting structure missing." He aimed a finger off to his left. "It seems like it should have started back there, don't you think? It looks like this place here should have a line going up this way and then back to that spot near her elbow." His attention riveted on the rhythm of lines, Richard was largely lost to the rest of the room. "It's impossible for you to know such a thing," Anne said flatly. He wasn't discouraged by her skepticism. "When someone shows you a circle and it has a flat spot in it, you know it's wrong, don't you? You can see the intended design and know that the flat spot doesn't belong there." "Richard, this is not some simple circle. You don't even know what you're looking at." She caught herself before her voice rose any more, clasped her hands before herself, and took a deep breath before going on. "I'm simply trying to point out that there is a great deal of complexities involved here that you are not aware of. The three of us haven't even begun to be able to unravel the mechanism behind the spell form, and we have extensive training in such things. Despite our training and knowledge, it's still far from complete enough for us to grasp the manner in which it functions. You don't understand the first thing about such complex motifs." Without turning to her, Richard flicked a hand to dismiss her concern. "Doesn't matter. The form is emblematic." Nathan cocked his head.
"It's what?"
"Emblematic," Richard murmured as he studied an intersection of lines, trying to identify the primary strand through the architecture of the lineation.
"So?"
his grandfather sputtered after Richard again fell to silent preoccupation. "I understand the jargon of emblems," he said absently, as he found the primary thread and traced it along a rise and fall and swirl of the pattern, all the time coming more in tune with its intent. "I told you that before."
"When?"
"Back when we were with the Mud People." Richard immersed himself in the flow of the design, trying to perceive the ascendant course among the lesser branches. "Kaelin was there. So was Anne."
"I'm afraid that we don't remember," Zed admitted after seeing Anne shake her head in frustration. He sighed unhappily. "Yet one more memory surrounding Kaelin lost to us because of what those sisters did."
Richard didn't really hear him. Growing ever more agitated, he waggled a finger back and forth at a breach in the lines just below Nikki's elbow. "I'm telling you, there's a line missing here. I'm sure of it." Richard turned to his grandfather. He saw then that everyone was staring at him.
"Right here," he told them as he pointed again. "From the end of this upward rising arc to this intersection of triangles, there should be a line."
Zed frowned.
"A line?"
"Yes." He didn't know why they hadn't spotted it before. It was stone-cold obvious to Richard, like a song sung with a note of the melody left out. A line is missing, an important line.
"Important," Anne repeated in weary exasperation.
Richard, becoming more unsettled by the moment, wiped a hand across his mouth. "Very important." Zed sighed. "Richard, what are you talking about?"
"There is no way you could know such a thing," Anne scoffed, her patience wearing thinner by the moment.
"Look," Richard said, turning back to them, "it's an emblem, a design."
Zed scratched the back of his head. glancing briefly to the window as a particularly violent fit of lightning flared so close that it released a crack of thunder that felt like it might loosen the stone walls of the keep. He turned back to Richard.
"And the design tells you something, Richard?"
"Yes. Such a design is like a translation from another language. In a way, it's what you're trying to understand by doing this verification web. This form characterizes a concept in much the same way that a math equation expresses physical attributes, such as an equation expressing the ratio of the circumference of a circle to the diameter. Emblematic forms can be a kind of language, too, the way mathematics is a form of language. They both are able to reveal something about the nature of things."
Zed patiently smoothed back his hair.
"You see emblems as a form of language?"
"In a way. Take the grace underneath Nikki, for example. That's an emblem. The outer circle represents the beginning of the underworld, while the inner circle represents the limits of the world of life. The square separating them represents the veil between those worlds. In the center is an 8-pointed star, representing the Creator's light. The 8 lines radiating out from the points of that star all the way out through the outer circle represent the gift carried from creation all the way through life, across the veil, and beyond into death. The whole thing is an emblem. When you see that emblem, you see it as a whole concept. You might say that you understand the language of it. If, during the casting of a spell, someone with the gift doesn't draw the grace correctly, hasn't spoken the language correctly, it won't work as intended, and might even cause trouble. Say you saw grace with a 9-pointed star, or with one of the circles missing. Wouldn't you know it was wrong? If the square representing the veil was drawn incorrectly, then under the right circumstances it could even theoretically breach the veil and allow the worlds to bleed together. It's an emblem. You understand the concept it represents. You know what it should look like. If it's drawn wrong, then you recognize it as wrong."
When the flashes of lightning flickered to a stop, the room felt forsaken in the weak light of lamps. Distant thunder rumbled ominously up from the valley below. Zed, standing stock still, studied Richard with more focus than he had been studying the verification web.
"I've never looked at it in quite that way before, Richard, but I grant that you may have a point."
Nathan arched a brow.
"He certainly does."
Anne sighed.
"Perhaps."
Richard turned from their dour expressions back to the glowing lines.
"This, right here," he said, gesturing, "is wrong."
Zed stretched his neck to peer at the lines.
"Let's just say, for the sake of argument, that you're right. What do you think it means?"
Richard's heart hammered as he made his way around the table, swiftly tracing lines through the spell. He used a finger, keeping it just clear of the lines of light, to track the primary pathways, the sweeps of the pattern, the fabric of the form. He found what he was expecting.
"Here, look here, at this newly formed structure that is built up around these older original lines. Look at the disordered nature of this new cluster. They're a variable, but in this emblem of lines it should all be a constant."
"Variable?" Zed sputtered, as if, having thought he was following Richard's reasoning, he had instead suddenly found that he was completely lost.
"Yes," Richard said. "It's not emblematic. It's a biological form. The two are clearly different."
Nathan wiped both hands back over his white hair as he sighed, but remained silent. Anne's face had gone crimson.
"It's a spell form. It's inert. It can't be biological."
"That's the problem," Richard said, answering her point rather than her anger. "You can't have these kind of variables tainting what's supposed to be a constant. It would be like a math equation in which any of the numbers could spontaneously change their value. Such a thing would render math invalid and unworkable. Algebraic symbols can vary, but even then they are specific relational variables. The numbers, though, are constants. Same with this structure. Emblems have to be constructed of inert constants. You might say, like simple addition or subtraction. An internal variable corrupts the constant of an emblematic form."
"I don't follow," Zed admitted.
Richard gestured to the table.
"You drew the grace in blood. The grace is a constant. The blood is biological. Why did you do it that way?" To make it work, Anne snapped. We had to do it that way in order to initiate an interior perspective of the verification web. That's the way it's done. That's the method.
Richard held up a finger.
Exactly. You deliberately introduced a controlled biological variable, blood, into what is a constant, a grace. Keep in mind, though, that it remains outside the spell form itself. It's merely an empowering agent, a catalyst. I think it must be that such a variable in the grace allows the spell you initiated to run its course without being influenced by a constant, the grace. Do you see? It gives the verification web not only the power invoked by the grace, but the freedom gained through the biological variable to allow it to grow as it needs to in order to reveal its true nature and intent.
When Zed glanced her way, Kara said, "Don't look at me. Whenever he starts in like this, I just nod and smile and wait until the trouble starts."
Zed made a sour face. One hand on a hip, he took a few paces away before turning back.
"I've never in all my years heard such an explanation of a verification web. It's quite a unique way of looking at it. The most troubling thing is that, in a perverse way, it actually makes sense. I'm not saying that I think you're right, Richard, but it certainly is a disturbing notion."
"If you're right," Nathan said, "it would mean that we've been children playing with fire all these years."
"That's if he's right," Anne added under her breath.
"Sounds a tick too clever to me." Richard stared up at the woman frozen in space, the woman who could not at the moment speak for herself.
"Whose blood did you use to draw the grace?" he asked the others behind him.
"Nikki's," Nathan said. "She suggested it herself. She said it was the proper method and the only way to make it work."
Richard turned to them. "Nikki's. You used Nikki's blood?"
Zed nodded. "That's right."
"You created a variable with her blood, and you put her inside of it?"
"Besides being what Nikki told us had to be done," Anne said, "we have a lot of research and reason to have confidence that this is the proper method of initiating an interior perspective."
"I'm sure you're right, under normal circumstances. Since you all know the proper method for doing such things, then that can only mean that the corruption is far different than any ordinary problem that could be anticipated to arise in the verification process."
Richard raked his fingers back through his hair. "It would have to be something, I don't know, something unimaginable."
Zed shrugged. "You really believe that having Nikki in there, when she was the source of the blood to power the web, could mean something troublesome, Richard?"
Richard pinched his lower lip as he paced. "Maybe not if the originating spell form you were verifying were pure, but this one isn't. It's contaminated by another biological variable. I think that providing the source of the control variable, Nikki, might allow the contamination all the latitude it needs."
"Meaning?" Nathan asked.
Richard gestured as he paced. "Meaning that it's like throwing oil on a fire." "I think the storm is letting our imaginations get carried away," Anne said.
"What biological variable could possibly contaminate a verification web?" Nathan asked.
Richard turned back and stared at the lines, following them around to that terrible arc that ended when it should be supported. He glanced across the empty space to the waiting intersection.
"I don't know," he finally admitted.
Zed stepped closer. "Richard, your ideas are original, and they are certainly thought-provoking, I'll grant you that. And it could be that they may provide us useful insights to help us understand more than we otherwise might have. But not everything you say is correct. Some of it is simply wrong."
Richard glanced back over his shoulder.
"Really? Like what?"
Zed shrugged. "Well, for one thing, biological forms can be emblematic as well. Is not an oak leaf biological? Don't you recognize that emblematic form? Isn't a snake something that can be expressed with an emblem? Isn't a whole entity, say a tree or a man, able to be represented emblematically?"
Richard blinked. "You're right. I never thought of it that way, but you're right."
He turned back to the spell form, viewing the area of biological contamination with new eyes. He scanned the confusing mass, trying to make sense of it, trying to discern a pattern. Try as he might, though, it seemed useless. There was no pattern. But why not? If its delineation was biological in origin, as he knew it was, then, according to Zed, there should be some kind of source pattern expressed within that depiction. But there was none. It was nothing more than a confusing mass all tangled up in a nest of meaningless lines. And then he realized that he thought he recognized a small portion within that mass. It looked somehow liquid. But that made no sense because he saw another part that looked almost the opposite. That other fragment looked more like an emblematic representation of fire. Unless there was more than one element to it. A tree could have an oak leaf emblem, an acorn, or the form that represented the whole tree. And what was to say that it couldn't be three different things all contaminating the spell form together? Three things. He saw them then. Each of those three elements. Water, fire, air. They were all there, all tangled together. "Dear spirits," Richard whispered, his eyes going wide. He straightened. Goosebumps tingled up his arms. "Get her out of there." "Richard," Nathan said, "she's perfectly—" "Get her out of there! Get her out now!" "Richard," Anne started, "I told you the spell form has a flaw." "Well, that's what we're trying to find out now, isn't it?" Anne said with exaggerated patience. "You don't understand." Richard gestured toward the wall of softly glowing lines. "This isn't the kind of flaw that anyone would be looking for. This one will kill her. The spell is no longer inert. It's mutating. It's becoming viable." "Viable?" Zed's expression twisted with incredulity. "How could you possibly—" "You have to get her out of there! Get her out now!" Chapter 6. Although she couldn't move, couldn't speak, Nikki was aware of everything that was being said, even if the voices sounded hollow, distant, temporal, as if coming from some faraway world beyond the greenish shroud. She wanted to scream, "Listen to him!" But held tightly as she was within the bosom of the casting, she could not. More than anything, she wanted out of the terrible tangle of crushing power that encased her. She hadn't understood the true meaning of an interior perspective before. None of them had. None of them could have guessed at the reality. Only after initiating the process had she discovered that such a perspective was not simply a way to view a verification web in more detail from the inside, as they had thought, but rather a means for the person doing the analysis to experience it within themselves. By then it was too late, and she could not tell the others that what it meant was that she would be perceiving the spell form by having it ignited within her. The part surrounding her was the mere aura of the conjured power that had dawned within her. It had at first been a revelation bordering on the divine. Not long after they had initiated it, though, something had begun to go wrong. What had been a profoundly beautiful form of vision had deteriorated into horrific agony. Every new line that sliced through space around her had a corresponding interior aspect that felt as if it were slashing through her soul. In the beginning, she had discovered that pleasure was part of the mechanism by which one perceived the spell as it unfolded. In much the same way in which pleasure could confirm wholesome, fitting aspects of life, it likewise revealed the intricate nature of the spell form in all its glory. It felt like watching a particularly beautiful sunrise, or tasting a delightful confection, or gazing into the eyes of someone you loved, and having them gaze back in the same way. Or at least, it was like what she imagined it would feel like to have them gaze back in that way. She had also discovered that, as in life, pain pointed out grievous disorders. Nikki would never have guessed that such a method had once been commonly used to analyze the inner functioning of a constructed magic, of gauging its inner health. She would never have guessed the complexity or extent of what the method could reveal. She would never have guessed how much it could hurt when something within the spell went awry. She wondered if she would still have insisted on doing such a thing had she known. She guessed that she would have, if it had a chance of helping Richard. At that moment, though, there was little else that mattered to her but the pain. It was beyond anything she had ever experienced. Not even the Dreamwalker himself had been able to give her this much pain. It was almost impossible for her to think of anything but her want of being free from the agony. So great was the magnitude of the taint within the spell that there was no doubt in her mind that experiencing it would, for her, be fatal. Richard had shown them the place it had begun to go wrong. He had pointed out the fundamental defect. The contamination concealed within the spell was pulling her apart. She could feel her life bleeding away beyond that terrible outer circle of the grace. That grace, drawn with her blood, had become her life, and it would be her death. For the moment, Nikki straddled two worlds, neither of them wholly real to her. While still in the world of life, she could feel herself inexorably slipping into that dark void beyond. All the while, the world of life around her was losing its vibrance. She was at that moment willing to let it all go, to let herself slip forever into the eternity of non-existence, if only it would mean that the pain would end. Even though she could not move, Nikki could see everything in the room, not with her eyes, but with her gift. Even beyond the suffering, she recognized such an exotic form of sight as an extraordinary experience. Vision through her gift alone had a singular quality that approached omniscience. She could see more than her eyes had ever allowed her to see. Despite her agony, there was a quiet majesty to it all. Beyond the net of greenish lines, Richard looked from one startled face to another.
"What's the matter with all of you? You have to get her out of there!"
Before Anne could launch into a lecture, Zed gestured for her to keep quiet. Once sure her lips would stay pressed tightly together, he turned his attention back to his grandson. Another line departed an intersection and traced a path through space. It felt to Nikki like a dull knitting needle taking a stitch in her soul, pulling the agony of that thread of light through her as it bound her ever more tightly to a dark death. It was all she could do to remain conscious. Surrender was seeming sweeter by the moment. Zed gestured up toward her. "We can't, Richard. These things have to run a course. The verification web runs itself through a series of connections, and in that way reveals information about its nature. Once the verification process has begun, it's impossible to halt it. It has to run its course to completion, and then it extinguishes." Nikki knew the grim truth of it. Richard seized his grandfather's arm. "How long?" He shook the old man like a rag doll. "How long does the process take?" Zed pried Richard's fingers off his arm. "We've never seen a spell like this. It's hard to say. But as complex as it's proving to be, I can't imagine it taking less than 3 or 4 hours. She's been in there an hour already, so it will be hours yet before it runs its course and extinguishes." Nikki knew that she didn't have hours. She had mere moments before the pull of the contamination drew her forever beyond the veil and into the world of the dead. She thought it a strange way for her life to end. So unexpected, so uneventful, so pointless. She would at least have wanted it to be an end that in some way would have helped Richard, or to have been after they knew that they had accomplished something. She wished her death could have at least bought him something of value. Richard turned back to gaze up at her.
"She won't last that long. We have to get her out of there now."
Inwardly, through her agony, she smiled. To the end. Richard would fight to the end against death.
"Richard," Zed said, "I can't imagine how you could possibly know such a thing, and I'm not saying that I don't believe you, but we can't shut down a verification web."
"Why not?"
"Well," Zed said as he sighed, "the truth is, I don't even know if such a thing is possible, but even if it were, none of us knows how to do it. The standard verification process builds safeguards to shield itself from tampering. This thing is an order of magnitude more complex and involved."
"Rather like trying to dismount in mid-gallop while racing along a ridgeline," the tall prophet said. "You need to wait until the horse is finished running before you jump off, or you will only be leaping to your death."
Richard returned to the table, frantically studying the structure constructed of light. Nicky wondered if he realized that, while it was to a degree tangible, what he was seeing existed mainly as a mere aura representing the real power raging through her. As another line advanced from an intersection at an angle that was dreadfully wrong, Nicky gasped inwardly. She felt something vital within her being slowly ripped open. The pain of it sang through the marrow of her bones. She saw darkness layered over the room, a new she was seeing into another world, the dark world where there would be no more pain. She began to allow herself to drift toward that world. And then she saw something in the otherworldly shadows. She caught herself, held herself back from the dark brink of death. Something with glowing eyes, like twin coals, gazed out from the dark shadows. The malevolent intent of that furnace gaze was fixed on Richard. Nicky struggled desperately to call out a warning. It cleaved her heart that she could not. "Look," Richard whispered as he gazed up at her. "There's a tear running down her cheek." Anne sadly shook her head. "Probably because she isn't blinking, that's all." Richard's hands fisted in frustration as he moved around the table, trying to decipher the meaning of the lines. "We have to find a way to shut the thing down. There has to be a way." Richard's grandfather laid a hand gently on the back of Richard's shoulder. "I swear, Richard, I would do as you want if I could, but I know of no method to halt a verification web. And what is it that has you so fired up, anyway? Why the sudden urgency? What is it that you think is contaminating the spell form?" Nicky's attention was locked on the thing watching out from the shadowy world of the dead. Whenever the lightning flared, illuminating the room, the thing with the glowing eyes wasn't there. Only when darkness again fell over the room could she see it. Richard's eyes turned from studying the lines to gaze up at Nicky's face. She wanted nothing so much as for him to reach out and pull her free of the agony of the spell that had impaled her on lethal shards of magic. But she knew that he could not. Right then, she would have willingly given up her life for one moment in his arms. Richard's answer finally came in a soft resignation. "The chimes." Anne rolled her eyes. Nathan let out a sigh of relief, as if he now knew that Richard was merely imagining things. Zed's brow lifted. "The chimes? Richard, I'm afraid that this time you've gotten it wrong. That simply isn't possible. The chimes are underworld elements. While they certainly lust to enter our world, they can't. They're forever trapped in the underworld." "I know very well what the chimes are," Richard said in a near whisper. "Kaelin freed them. She freed them to save my life. She couldn't possibly know how to do such a thing. Nathan told her how, told her their names. Rikchani, Centrosi, Vasi. Water, fire, air. Calling them was the only way for her to save my life. It was an act of desperation." Nathan's mouth fell open in surprise, but he offered no argument. Anne cast a suspicious glare up at the prophet. Zed spread his hands. "Richard, she may have thought she was calling them, but I assure you such a thing is monumentally complex. Besides, we would know if the chimes were free in our world. Be at ease about this much of it. The chimes are not loose." "Not anymore," Richard said with grim finality. "I banished them back to the underworld. But Kaelin always believed that because she unknowingly brought them into our world, it had engendered the beginning of the destruction of magic itself. The cascade effect, as you once described it to us." Zed was taken aback. "The cascade effect? You could only have heard that from me." Richard nodded as he stared off into memories. "She tried to convince me that magic had been tainted by the presence of the chimes, and that banishing them back to the underworld would not halt that taint. I never knew whether or not she was right. Now I do." He pointed up at that awful place before Nicky, that core of her pain, her agony, her end. "There is the proof. Not the chimes, but the corruption their presence caused, the contamination of magic. That contamination has infected this world. It was drawn to the strength of this magic.
It has infected the chain fire spell, and it will kill Nikki if we don't get her out of there.
The room had grown darker yet. Nikki could hardly see through the veil of pain. But she could still see those sinister eyes behind Richard, in the shadows, watching, waiting. No one but Nikki knew that it was there, in that spectral place between worlds. Richard would never know what hit him. Nikki had no way to warn him. She felt another tear roll down her face. Richard, seeing that tear drip from her jaw, leaned close. With quiet determination, he used a finger to trace the primary pathways, the supporting junctures, and the main framework of the emblem, as he called it. It should be feasible, he insisted. Anne looked beside herself, but she remained silent. Nathan watched with stony resignation. Zed pushed his simple robes farther up his bony arms. Richard, it's impossible to shut down a regular verification web, much less one such as this. No, it's not, Richard said, irritably. Here, see here? You have to interrupt this route here, first. Bags, Richard, how am I supposed to do such a thing? The spell shields itself. This web is powered by subtractive as well as additive magic. It has integral shields constructed of both. Richard stared at his grandfather's crimson face a moment before turning back to the maze of lines. He gazed up at Nikki again, and then carefully inserted a hand in through the net of lines to touch Nikki's black dress. "I won't let it have you," he whispered to her. No words had ever sounded sweeter, even if she knew he could not understand the impossibility of his promise. When his finger touched her dress, the pattern shifted from two-dimensional to three-dimensional forms that looked more like a thorn bush than a spell form. It felt to Nikki as if he had just twisted a knife through her insides. She struggled to remain conscious. She focused on the glowing eyes in the shadows. She had to find a way to warn Richard. His hand paused. He carefully pulled it back out. The pattern flattened to two-dimensional. Nikki would have sighed in relief could she breathe. "Did you see that?" he asked. Zed nodded. "I certainly did." Richard glanced back over his shoulder at his grandfather. "Is it supposed to do that?" "No, I didn't think so. It's supposed to be inert, but the biological variable contaminating it has changed the nature of the host spell form." Zed's expression tightened as he considered. "It seems pretty obvious that whatever is going on, it's changing the way the spell works." Richard nodded. "Worse, it's a random variable. The contamination caused by the chime's presence in this world is biological. It evolves, probably so that it can attack different kinds of magic. This spell will undoubtedly continue to mutate. There's probably no way to predict how it will change, but from the evidence here, it appears that it's only going to become more virulent. As if chain fire isn't trouble enough, this could make it worse. It could even be that everyone affected by it will develop problems beyond their memory loss revolving around Kalen." "What makes you say that?" Zed asked. "Just look at how many memories of events only tangent to Kalen you've all lost. The lost memories could even be the means by which the contamination infects those people touched by the effects of the chain fire event." As if the chain fire event being loosed on the world weren't potentially deadly enough, it now seemed catastrophic beyond imagining. Anne was bottled fury. She gritted her teeth. "Where did you learn such gibberish?" Zed flashed her a scowl. "Be quiet. I told you I understand emblematic designs. This one is a mess." Nathan glanced to the windows as they lit with flashes of lightning. When the room again fell to darkness, Nikki could again see the thing watching from a dark world. "And you sincerely believe that it's somehow harming Nikki?" Zed asked. "I know it is. Look at this divergence, right here. Such a thing is lethal even without this added breach over here. I know a lot about representational designs involving lethality." Zed gave Richard a forbidding look. "I need to know what you're talking about, what you mean by representational designs involving lethality. Later, we have to get her out of there first, and we have to get her out now." Zed shook his head in resignation. I wish I knew a way, Richard. I truly do. But as I've said, I don't. If you try to pull her out of there before the verification has run its course, that alone will kill her for sure. That much I do know. Why? Because her life is, in a way, suspended. Don't you see that she isn't breathing? The spell form surrounding her supports her life while she cannot, while the web runs through the verification. She is, in a way, now a part of the spell itself. Pull her out, and you will be pulling her out of the mechanism that is keeping her alive. Nikki's heart sank. For a moment she had begun to believe Richard, to believe that he could do it. It was not to be. All the while the glowing eyes watched. She could see the shape of it now, standing there in the dark shadows beside a tall shelf. It looked something like a man twisted into a fearsome beast of sinew and knotted muscle. Its eyes gleamed out from the darkness of death itself. It was the beast that hunted Richard. The beast sent by Jagang, the Dreamwalker. She would have done anything to stop it, to keep it from Richard, but she could not move a muscle. With every new line of light, she was being stitched tighter and tighter to her fate, pulled inexorably into the darkness of eternity beyond life. "Even if it's mutating," Richard said, as if thinking aloud, "it still has elements that support it while it grows. Richard, a verification web is self-generating. Even if it was mutating, like you say, there is no way to halt such an event." "If it can be shut down," Richard murmured, "it will release her. Then we won't be pulling her out of it while her life is still being supported by the spell." Sighing, Zed shook his head as if he thought Richard hadn't understood a thing he'd said. Richard studied the lines one last time, then abruptly reached out and placed his finger at an intersection that had been created back before the area of contamination. The line extinguished at his finger. "Dear spirits," Nathan said as he leaned in. The shadow took a step forward. Nikki could now see its fangs. The line that had extinguished felt as if it pulled her insides out with it. Nikki fought to cling to life. If he really could do it, if he really could extinguish the spell, she had a chance to warn him. If she could hold on that long. Richard withdrew his finger. The line ignited again. It lanced through her like a razor-sharp spear. The world flickered. "See?" Zed reached out to duplicate what Richard had done, but with a yelp of pain pulled his hand back as if he'd been burned. "It's shielded with subtractive magic," Anne said. Zed shot her a murderous scowl. "And remember the shields back at the Palace of the Prophets?" Richard asked her. "Remember how I was able to pass through them?" Anne nodded. "I still have nightmares about it." Richard reached out again, quickly this time, and again blocked the line of light. Again it extinguished. Richard then put a finger from his other hand at an intersection preceding the darkened line. In a blink, more lines went dark. He moved his first finger to insert it at another key point, working his way back through the pattern, causing the spell to turn in on itself. The darkened line raced around Nikki, hitting intersections, making turns, sweeping through and darkening arcs. The line Richard had extinguished ceased to exist in the pattern, its absence causing an interruption in the vitality of the rhythm. Nikki marveled at the reaction of the spell form within her. She could sense in detail the process of it dismantling, like a flower closing its petals. The room again seemed to shimmer in Nikki's gifted vision, as if lightning were flaring. But she knew that this was not lightning. The glowing eyes peered about, as if it, too, sensed the fluctuation in the flux of power Richard had interrupted. Didn't anyone but Nikki realize that Richard was using his gift to penetrate such shields? Were they blind? The use of his gift drew the beast out of the underworld. Outside, real lightning flashed and thunder boomed. The room flickered not only with the lightning, but with the disruption of power within the spell form. The wall of windows flashed between blinding brightness and inky obscurity. It felt to Nikki as if both of those powerful discharges thundered right through her,
She could not understand how she was still alive. It could only be that Richard was shutting down the spell without destroying it. He was methodically extinguishing it, like snuffing out the flames on a row of wicks. Focused in concentration, Richard put his other hand down lower and blocked another line. The line went dark, racing back through the complex matrix. The shadow of the beast began to step out of the underworld, partially into the world of life, pulling and flexing its arms with the difficulty of the task, testing its newborn muscle. Fangs glistened in the lamplight as the jaws stretched wide. Their attention riveted on the lines around Nikki, no one noticed. Holding a block in one network of lines, Richard carefully inserted a finger to occlude a preceding framework. The entire web, having lost not just its most important supporting structure, but its very integrity, began to come apart. Angles opened, intersections disjointed, letting connecting lines sag away. Other lines collided, sparking flashes of white light upon contact that made yet more lines go dark. All of a sudden, the web of remaining lines collapsed downward, like a curtain falling. Nikki could feel the network of power laced all through her slough away. As the falling lines of light hit the grace, they went dark. In an instant, they were gone. Free from the tangle, Nikki abruptly dropped to the table as she gasped a breath, like a scream drawn inward. Her legs had no strength to hold her, and she crumpled, toppling over the edge of the table. Richard caught her in his arms as she fell. Her dead weight took him to one knee. He maintained his balance, cradling her in his arms, saving her from hitting the stone floor. Outside, lightning went wild, casting the room in fits of flickering light. It was then that the beast, a soulless creature created for a single purpose, materialized fully out of the world of the dead and into the world of life, and sprang straight for Richard. Chapter 7. Hanging limp and helpless in Richard's arms, despite how much she tried, Nikki simply could not bring forth enough strength to warn him of the beast about to crash down on him. She would have given her last breath to deliver that warning, but right then she had no breath. It was Kara, throwing all her weight at the charging creature, who deflected the full force of the attack and saved Richard from a killing strike. The beast's fangs caught only air as it crashed past Richard, but its claws ripped through the flesh at the back of his shoulder. Knocked off balance from Kara's tackle, the beast stumbled past Richard and smashed headlong into one of the heavy shelves. Bones, books, and boxes tumbled down. The thing scrambled to its feet, snarling, fangs bared, muscles taut. Stretching for a moment to its full height, it was a good foot taller than Richard, and its shoulders were nearly twice as wide. Bony projections marked its hunched spine. Dark, leathery flesh, like that of a desiccated corpse, covered powerful muscles. It was a creature that wasn't really alive, and yet it moved and reacted as if it were. Nikki knew that it had no soul, and for that reason it was all the more dangerous. It had been conjured in part from the lives and Han, the gift of living men. It acted with the single-minded purpose that had been instilled in it by its creators, Jagang's Sisters of the Dark. As it immediately recovered and again went for Richard, Kara lashed out with her Ajeel. The beast didn't appear to be harmed in the least by the weapon, but it abruptly halted and twisted toward the moored Sith with shocking speed and strength, backhanding her hard enough to send her flying. She crashed into a bookcase, toppling it back. Kara didn't rise from the jumble of books and splintered wood. As lightning flashed outside the tall windows, Zed used the opening to thrust out a hand, unleashing a shimmering bolt of power that lit the room. Shards of white-hot light exploded against the dark hide of the beast's chest, leaving lines of soot radiating outward as evidence of the contact that didn't appear to have caused any real harm. Nikki, after Richard had laid her on the floor, was just starting to be able to pull desperately needed air into her lungs. She put an elbow out to prop herself up as she gasped for breath.
She saw blood running from Richard's shoulder and down his arm. As he rose to meet his attacker, he reached for his sword, but his sword was no longer there, at his hip. Slowed for only an instant, he instead drew a knife from a sheath at his belt. As he met the threat racing toward him, he slashed with the blade, making solid contact that sent the creature reeling. Staggered by the blow and knocked from its feet, it tumbled across the stone floor, stopping only when it collided with one of the massive shelves. A ragged flap of leathery flesh hung like a flag from the injured shoulder. Without slowing, without pause, the beast sprang into a somersault and landed on its feet, ready to renew its attack. Anne and Nathan both threw fiery bolts at it. Rather than incinerating it, the conjured flames splashed off the beast. Unharmed, it roared with fury. Flashes of lightning glinted off the razor-sharp blade poised motionless in Richard's fist. The creature seemed all fangs and claws as it again lunged for him. Richard stepped aside, gracefully turning with the beast's onrushing charge, and with a backhanded swing slammed his knife hilt deep into the center of its chest. It was a perfectly executed strike. Unfortunately, it seemed to have had no more effect than anything else that had been tried. The creature wheeled with impossible speed and seized Richard's wrist. Before it could catch him up in its powerful arms, Richard twisted under the grip and came up behind his attacker. He gritted his teeth with the mighty effort of twisting the creature's powerful arm up behind its knobby back. Nicky heard the joints pop and bones snap. Rather than the injury slowing the beast, it whirled around, swinging the broken arm like a flail. Richard ducked and rolled away as deadly claws scythed past. Zed used the opening to ignite a sphere of seething liquid fire. Even the lightning seemed to pause in the presence of such profound power brought to life. The room vibrated with the howl of the deadly, concentrated inferno Zed unleashed. The knot of churning flames shrieked through the dark room, illuminating the tables and chairs, the shelves and columns, and the faces of everyone watching as it swept past. The beast glanced back over its shoulder at the tumbling, hissing yellow conflagration wailing across the room, and defiantly bared its fangs at the approaching fire. It struck Nicky as an odd thing for the creature to do, almost as if it didn't fear fire conjured by a wizard. Nicky had trouble imagining anything that could withstand such an onslaught, or not fear it. This was no mere fire, after all, but a menace that burned with phenomenal ferocity. An instant before the writhing sphere of wizard's fire reached its target, the creature simply winked out of existence. Absent an objective, the fire splashed down on the stone floor, exploding across the carpets and breaking over tables like a rogue wave crashing ashore. Although conjured for a specific enemy, Nicky knew that runaway wizard's fire could easily annihilate them all. Before it could destroy the room or anyone in it, Zed, Nathan, and Anne immediately cast yet more webs, Zed doing his best to recall his power, while the other two suppressed and smothered the flames before they had a chance to get out of control. Clouds of steam billowed up as they all worked to contain any errant droplets of the tenacious fire. It was a tense moment before they knew that they had succeeded. Beyond the fog of vapor, Nicky saw the beast materialize out of the darkness. It appeared behind Zed, back in the shadows where she'd first seen it step into the world of life. Nicky was the only one who realized that it had returned in a different place. She had never before seen the creature slip in and out of the world of the dead at will, but she knew that was the method by which it was able to track and follow Richard across vast distances. She knew, too, that no matter the form it took, it would never rest until it had him. Richard spotted the beast coming for him before any of the others, and called out a warning to Zed, standing directly in the path of the wild charge. Zed blocked that charge by massing the air itself into a densely compressed, angled shield. The trick deflected the beast's course by just enough. Richard used the diversion to slash at his attacker. Before his knife could make contact, the beast again winked out of existence, only to return an instant later, once past Richard's blade. It almost seemed to be toying with them, but Nicky knew that that wasn't the case. It was merely employing varying tactics in its soulless quest to have Richard.
Even its seemingly angry roars were merely a tactic meant to weaken its victim with fear, thereby giving it a chance to strike. Instilling the capacity for emotion in it would have produced limitations. Therefore, Jagang's sisters had left such qualities out. The beast was incapable of actually feeling anger. It was simply unremitting in its purpose. Anne and Nathan released a torrent of power concentrated into thousands of small, rock-hard, deadly points that could have shred the hide right off an ox. But before the hurtling fragments could rip into the creature, it again effortlessly evaded the attacks by stepping into a shadow and coming out once again in another place. Nikki realized that none of them had the ability to stop the thing. Struggling to recover her strength, she scrambled across the floor to check on Kara. Still lying against a wall, Kara was dazed and having difficulty regaining her senses. Nikki pressed her fingers to the moored Sith's temples, trickling in a thread of magic to wake her and revive her strength. She seized the woman by her leather outfit when she suddenly tried to scramble to her feet. "Listen to me," Nikki said. "If you want to save Richard, you have to listen to me. You can't stop that thing." Not one to take instruction well, especially when it came to protecting Richard, Kara saw the immediate threat and sprang into action. As the beast spun around and focused on Richard, Kara threw herself at it, down low, rolling under it, knocking it from its feet. Before it could recover, she leaped on the beast's back, as if mounting a wild stallion, and jammed her agile into the base of its skull. It was a move that would have killed any man. When the beast reared up on its knees, she hooked the weapon across the front of its throat. With its good arm, the creature snatched Kara's agile and effortlessly ripped it from her grip. Kara vaulted for the weapon and snatched it back, but it cost her a blow that again sent her tumbling across the floor. As everyone clambered back from the creature, trying to stay out of the reach of its deadly claws, it threw its head back and roared. The sound was so deafening that everyone winced. Flashes of lightning lit beyond the windows, throwing blindingly bright light and a jumble of confusing shadows through the nearly dark room, making it difficult to see. Zed, Nathan, and Anne conjured shields of air and used them to try to force the threat back. But the beast was able to crash through the shields and charge for their creators, forcing them to dodge out of harm's way. Nikki knew that the three of them could not stop such a menace with the power they had. She didn't see how Richard could, either. As the others continued to fight with every bit of ability and cunning they could muster, Nikki again seized a fistful of Kara's leather outfit at her shoulder and hauled her close. "Are you ready to do it my way, or do you want Richard to die?" Kara, panting from the exertion, looked ready to spit fire, but she heeded Nikki's words. "What do you want me to do?" "Be ready to help me. Be ready to do exactly as I ask." After receiving a nod of agreement, Nikki scrambled back up onto the table. She placed one foot in the center of the grace drawn in her own blood, and the other out beyond the outer circle. Zed, Nathan, and Anne threw everything they could conjure at the rampaging beast. Webs of arcing power that could have cut stone, intensely focused force that could have bent iron, a hail of air concentrated into nodules hard enough to pulverize bone. None of it had any effect on the creature. In some cases, it wasn't affected by their power, while at other times it swiped at the assaults, brushing them aside, or avoided them altogether by winking out of existence only to reappear once the threat had passed. It again turned its attention to its purpose and lunged for Richard. He dodged to the side and once more used his knife to rip through the creature's tough hide, trying to sever an arm. That, too, Nikki knew, would do no good. As the others shouted instructions, trying to find a way to destroy the threat, Kara, torn between helping Richard and following instructions, turned and peered up at Nikki. "What are you doing?" Nikki, not having the time to answer questions, pointed. "Can you lift that candelabra?" Kara glanced back over her shoulder. It was made of heavy wrought iron and held 2 dozen candles, none of them lit. "Probably. Use it like a lance. Drive the beast back toward the windows." "What good is that going to do?" The beast lunged at Richard, trying to get its arms around him. Richard twisted away and in the process landed a powerful kick to its head that did no more than momentarily stagger it. "Just do as I say. Use it like a lance to drive the creature back, and make sure that the others stand back and stay clear."
You think that if I can club it with the candelabra, that will stop it?
No, it learns. This will be something new. Just drive it back. It should be momentarily confused, or at least cautious. As soon as you force it back, throw the candelabra at it, and then get yourself clear.
Kara, her lips pressed tightly together in frustrated fury, considered for only an instant. She was a woman who knew that hesitation could bring harm. She grabbed the heavy main post of the candle-stand in both hands, and with a mighty effort lifted it. The candles fell from their cups, bouncing and rolling across the stone floor. It was clear to Nikki how heavy the iron stand was. She thought, though, that Kara had enough muscle to handle it. There was no doubt that she had the metal. But Nikki could no longer worry about Kara. She put the woman from her mind and straightened both arms, extending her hands down toward the bloody depiction of the grace beneath her. She disregarded her doubts, her fears, and, as she had done countless times before, drew her mind back into the core of Han within herself. This time, above the grace, it felt like falling back into an icy pool of power. Ignoring the fate she was condemning herself to, she turned her palms upward and lifted her hands, using that icy pool of power within herself to begin to bring the verification web back to its induction point. From within the dominion of the grace, Nikki concentrated on a mental image of removing the countervailing blocks within the spell form that kept it contained and inert, with deliberate intent. Once she had exposed the inner field that only she could see, she used both sides of her power to connect opposing junctions. In an instant, the green lines again started twisting their way up, like some ravenous vine made of light. In a heartbeat, the network of lines was as high as her thighs. Kara thrusted and stabbed at the beast. Several times she made solid contact with her unwieldy iron weapon, knocking the creature back a step. Each time it took a step back, she immediately jabbed again, forcing it back another step, then another. Nikki had been right. The creature reacted cautiously to the unexpected nature of the attack. She hoped that Kara could get the beast back, not only far enough, but in time. Bolts of lightning arced through the night sky, illuminating the wall of thick glass windows. Compared to the forces of the storm, the oil lamps were so weak as to be nearly useless. The flashes back and forth between blinding light and darkness made it difficult to see. As the glowing greenish lines that were the mere reflection of the inner aspect of a spell that had been created thousands of years before by men long ago lost to history wove their way up around her, that inner spell form once again ignited, lancing through her far faster than it had the first time. Nikki hadn't been entirely ready. She went blind before she expected. She struggled to breathe while she still could, while she still had a remnant of control. A gifted vision began to flicker back and forth between both worlds, between the light of life and eternal blackness. The dark void beyond came and went in flashes, much like the lightning outside the window, but with blinding darkness rather than blinding light. Straddling both worlds, Nikki felt as if her soul would be ripped apart. She ignored the pain and focused on the task at hand. She knew that she could not destroy such a beast with her power alone. Sisters of the Dark had, after all, created it with the help of ancient powers that she could not begin to fathom. The conjured creature was the match of anything Nikki knew how to call forth. It would take something more than mere sorcery. Back near the windows, the beast finally dug in and halted its brief retreat. Kara jabbed at it, but the snarling beast would retreat no more. Kara was having difficulty handling the heavy iron candle-stand. When Richard started to come to her aid, she yelled at everyone to get back. When he didn't obey, she swung the candle-stand around, making him jump back and letting him know that she meant business. Putting all her strength into the effort, Nikki brought her palms up, preparing to do the impossible. She had to find the cusp between nothing and the ignition of power. She needed not power, but its precursor. The green lines advanced farther up around her in their determined work of encasing her in the totality of the spell. Nikki tried to draw a breath, but her muscles would not respond. She needed the breath, just one breath. When the world of life flashed back into her gifted vision,
She pulled with all her might, and at last drew that breath. "Now, Kara!" Without hesitation, Kara heaved the heavy candelabra. The beast easily caught the massive iron candlestand in one clawed hand, lifting it high. Behind it, through the windows, lightning cracked and boomed. Nikki paused, waiting for a lull in the flashes. When it came, when the room plunged back into darkness, she cast out not power, but its antecedent.
This is the end of disc number 2. Please continue listening on disc number 3.